Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 9, text 12. Aho kastam anyayam yat yuyam dharmanandana jivitam arhata klishtam vipra dharma achuta ashraya aho kastam aho nyayam aho kastam aho nyayam yadyuyam dharmanandana na yadyuyam dharmanandana jivitam narta klishtam jivitam narhata klishtam vipra dharma achush achut srasraya vipra dharma achutasraya aho kastam aho nyayam yadyuyam dharmanandana jivitam narhata jivitam narhata klishtam vipra dharma achutasraya. Others. Vaishnavis.
Yeah.
Yajiyam dharma nandana jivitam nahata klishtam vipradharm achutasraya aho kastana ho nyayam yajiyam dharma nandana nahatam klishtam Vipradharma chutasraya. Aho. Oh. Kastam. What terrible sufferings. Aho. Oh. Anyayam. What terrible injustice. Yat. Because. Yuyam. All of you good souls. Dharmanandana. Sons of religion personified. Jivitam, to remain alive. Na, never. Arhata, deserve. Klishtam, suffering. Vipra, brahmanas. Dharma, piety. Achyuta, God. Ashraya, being protected by. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Bhishmadev said, Oh, what terrible sufferings and what terrible injustices you good souls suffer for being the sons of religion personified. You did not deserve to remain alive under those tribulations, yet you are protected by the brahmanas, God, and religion. Purport. Maharaj Yudhisthira was disturbed due to the great massacre and the battle of Kurukshetra. Bhishmadev could understand this, and therefore he spoke first of the terrible sufferings of Maharaj Yudhisthira. He was put into difficulty by injustice only, and the battle of Kurukshetra was fought just to counteract this injustice. Therefore, he should not regret the great massacre. He wanted to point out particularly that they were always protected by the brahmanas, the Lord, and religious principles. As long as they were protected by these three important items, there was no cause of disappointment. Thus, Bhishmadev encouraged Maharaj Yudhisthira to dissipate his despondency. As long as a person is fully in cooperation with the wishes of the Lord, guided by the bona fide brahmanas and Vaishnavas, and strictly following religious principles, one has no cause for despondency, however trying the circumstances of life. Bhishmadev, as one of the authorities in the line, wanted to impress this point upon the Pandavas. Om Aginata Madanda Shajananjana Shalakaya Chakshura Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gadeva Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Upakadamayam Dadati Swapadanti Kam. So on Sunday, when Srivastava was making some announcements at the end of the kirtan, but before we started doing the bathing ceremony, he referred to an email that he received, I believe from Bhadranarayan Maharaj, was the person who circulated it, and it was mentioning how there was I can't remember which publication it was, a very well-known publication, had an article in it, and that article was, the title of the article was The 30 Most Scenic Places, or Beautiful Places in America to Visit, Scenic Places. And Maharaj said, please look through this article. He gave the link, because you're going to find the surprise. And the surprise was that the Palace of Gold, Prabhupada's Palace of Gold in New Vrindavan, was mentioned as one of those 30 most scenic or beautiful places to visit in America. Right? So I received that email too. And in the course of going through the different, because it wasn't number one, it was embedded in there someplace among the 30, but in the course of scrolling through the article to find what the surprise was, I also noticed that one of the places mentioned was Wellesley College in Wellesley, Massachusetts, because it had supposedly the most beautiful college campus of all the colleges in the United States, or one of them. Anyway, so it was listed. So let's everybody imagine, just for the sake of this point I want to make, that we're in Wellesley, Massachusetts, okay? And we're at Wellesley College, beautiful, beautiful campus, one of the 30 most beautiful spots in America to visit. Okay, so the exercise goes like this, that imagine that the dean of that college. The dean is, if pretty much everyone knows who the dean is, but just in case, the dean is like the buck stops there. The dean is in charge of every different aspect of life at a college. He's in charge of the academics. He's in charge of the social life. He's in charge of everything. He's got his hands at any when he wants to and anything. I mean, I've been talked to by deans when we set up even a book table on the campus, and the dean can come out and just kind of tell you, I don't want you here, or you're okay, or whatever. You know, he's the overall guy in control. That's the dean has a lot of administrative powers like that. Okay, so the dean of the college calls a meeting of all the faculty, you know, all the teachers, all the instructors, all the professors like that, the staff of the college, and he says, okay, we're going to put on a skit. You know, and this skit, the purpose of this skit is to, you know, impart a lesson to the incoming freshmen and to the student body at large. And, you know, we're going to do this. It's going to be entertaining, but we're going to have a message. You know, it's meant to teach them something. It's educational is the main purpose behind it. But we're going to do it in such a way that they, you know, they enjoy it and we'll enjoy it too. So the messages they want to get is get across, you know, communicate is that be a responsible student. So the dean appoints the chairman of the Department of Philosophy and Religion. He says, okay, you're going to play the part of a student that comes in and he's very irresponsible. He engages in all sorts of extracurricular activities, neglects his studies, and he, you know, just goes out and partying all the time with his friends and the girlfriends and drinking, and you're going to play the part of that person, and the play is going to show how, because of the way, you know, the poor way in which you're using your free will, your academic standing deteriorates, and eventually you drop out or you flunk out or whatever, and you wind up like a bum on the Bowery, or as Prabhupada would say, a bump on the Bowery, in a very destitute condition, and et cetera. So, you know, he just reveals the plot to them. So the idea is that the dean and the faculty, in the course of producing this, putting on this skit or this play, they will enjoy it. You know, they'll enjoy interacting with each other because they know each other. You know, they're working with each other on a day-to-day basis for years, you know. So they'll enjoy doing it, and they'll get a message across. And hopefully it'll be of benefit to the incoming freshmen and to the student body at large. And by the way, the entire community is invited. It's open. It's not just anybody in Wellesley, Massachusetts, or any place in the United States, for that matter, is welcome to attend this play if they so desire to do so. Okay? So the point, the analogy is this, that's what's going on here. That's what's happening here. You see? This is a pastime. This is just like what I was saying. Krishna's like the supreme dean, okay? And his devotees are like the faculty members. They're like the staff. They're like the professors and the instructors. And Krishna here is, this is a pastime. It's been set up ultimately by Krishna for the purpose of instructing, you know, imparting a lesson, a message to devotees, you know, in general, and anybody else who's interested to learn it. And yeah, because if you stop and analyze what's going on here, here's Bhishma Dev speaking, okay, and he's speaking to the Pandavas. They're all, you know, and he's talking, Bhishma Dev is lamenting, he's regretting about how the Pandavas have had to suffer and you know, these injustices and et cetera. Is this because the Pandavas are receiving a karmic reaction? Is this because the Pandavas need to learn something? Well, you could always learn more. I mean, as advanced as somebody is, because obviously the Pandavas are already devotees of Krishna. So even in, as advanced as a devotee is, there's always room to make more advancement, to learn more. But, you know, in their case, they're elevated devotees. So what's going on here? Prabhupada, I don't know if it's in the books, but I've heard him say it, that sometimes the mother teaches the daughter-in-law by teaching the daughter. You've heard that expression? You know, Prabhupada has given that in class. In other words, say her son gets married. It's a family, okay? The son gets married and he brings his new bride home to the, you know, his family home there. And his mother wants to instruct her. the daughter-in-law. But it's sensitive. It's a sensitive situation. You know, she's a new person in the family. She's a new person in the home. And she doesn't want to get, you know, she wants to make sure she feels comfortable and welcome and loved and appreciated and like that. So she doesn't want to right off the bat start chastising or criticizing or, you know, correcting her in different ways, because that might, you know, she might take it in the wrong way. It might be counterproductive. So what the mother does is they're in the kitchen, okay, and the mother is correcting and instructing her daughter, you see, and the daughter-in-law is there. See, so the mother is instructing the daughter-in-law. That's what the instruction is actually intended for, the daughter-in-law, because the daughter knows all this stuff. The daughter's been working with the mother in the kitchen for, you know, 25 years or something like that. She knows what's going on inside and out, back and front. She doesn't. But the mother instructs the daughter so that the daughter-in-law will hear. She's there, and she'll hear. And she won't think, she won't feel like it's personally like an attack on her, you know, but she'll learn. So indirectly. So that's what's going on here. Krishna is instructing the devotees at large, the devotee community at large. This is meant for the devotee community at large. In other words, us and all generations prior to us and all generations that will follow us, you know, for our benefit, and not for these intimate associates, because they already know all this stuff. They're way beyond needing to, they're way beyond receiving a karmic reaction. They're even way beyond needing these kind of, you know, lessons in devotional service. But it's meant for our benefit. So, in general, that's what's that's Krishna's purpose. You know, that's the purpose. That's Krishna's purpose in actually creating this whole cosmic manifestation. This cosmic manifestation is a place for the conditioned souls to improve themselves in devotional service. I think I gave class on Monday. I apologize. I wasn't. Today was somebody else was scheduled, but it was a bit of a mix-up, so that's why I'm giving a class again today. But I think I mentioned on Monday that I read an excerpt from a purport from the third canto of the Bhagavatam, where Prabhupada stated that how the Lord is ever increasingly merciful to the conditioned souls, and how this material cosmic manifestation is just an opportunity to improve in devotional service, and that we're meant for that purpose. You see? So that's what this is all about. Krishna is all about training and education. This whole material world is just about training and education. That's what's going on here. So, these lessons are meant, you know, these things that are happening, it's all meant for us. It's meant for our benefit. And it's particularly meant for the benefit of the devotees. I mean, it's meant for Krishna, like I said in that analogy, the dean and the faculty, everybody's welcome to attend that play, but mostly it's just going to be the students who are going to be there. So in the same way, when Krishna performs these pastimes, like are being described here, particularly this one and in general in the Bhagavatam, they're meant for everybody's benefit, but it's the devotees who are going to, you know, focus in on it and really learn, because it's the devotees who are interested in this kind of thing. See, just to give you an example, this is a mundane example, but it kind of makes the point. When I was a kid, I was from a Jewish background, so we had this thing called the Bar Mitzvah. Probably many of you might have heard of it. Anyway, so in preparation for that, you go to Hebrew school for 5 years or something like that before your Bar Mitzvah. So, but most of the kids, myself included, we just went because our parents said, you got to go. So, and we went and we just sat there and we didn't really do the homework or pay much attention or anything like that. So the teacher, he was aware of that. But there was, so the particular Hebrew school I went to, the teacher, he was aware of that, and he was a smart man too, you know. He didn't want to waste his breath on or energy on a bunch of kids that just were coming, you know, because they were being coerced to do so by their parents and couldn't care less and really weren't going to pay any attention. So what he did was, it was one particular student who was really into it, who was really interested to learn. So we'd all get there, you know, and he'd make a couple introductory remarks, and then he'd just take that one student, the kid who was actually interested to learn, and he'd say, okay, it's Fisher. That was his name, Fisher. Come on up here. And he'd just have this one boy come up right close to him, and he'd just work with him for like half hour, 45 minutes, pretty much the whole class, and then in the last 5 minutes he talked to us again, and that was it, you see? Because he knew, well, I'm not going to waste my time with these kids. They're not going to listen anyway, but this guy wants to learn, so let me teach him. So it's kind of like that, you know, see? Krishna performs these pastimes ultimately, I mean, everybody is can benefit from them, but it's the devotees. It's the devotees who he's mostly concerned about, because he knows it's the devotees who are interested to make advancement in devotional service. Krishna wants to work with the people who want to learn, who want to advance, you know, who want to progress. That's what he's interested in. He's helping us. He's interested in helping us improve ourselves in devotional service so we can get out of this material world and go back to Godhead. Now, somebody might ask, okay, well, you know, this Krishna sounds like Krishna's very kind to his devotees. He's very merciful. Well, if that's the case, you know, why is it that sometimes bad things happen to devotees? You know, if Krishna's, you know, personally, just like personally paying attention to the devotees, not to the exclusion, but in preference to the not, why is it that sometimes undesirable things happen, apparently undesirable things occur in the lives of the devotees? And the example is here. Bhishma Dev is, you know, reflecting about this. How is it, he's going, how is it possible that the you Pandavas, you have to suffer these injustices, and this is like, you know, this is so unfair, and this is, how is it, you know, because you're so pious and you're so elevated and you're so... So the answer to that is actually bad things don't happen to devotees. Only good things happen to the devotees. But there's two categories of good things that happen to the devotees. There's the good things that happen to the devotees that we like and that we also feel like, oh, this is a good thing. And there's the good things that happen to devotees that we don't like and we don't understand. Well, how is this happening? But it's also a good thing. And I'll explain what I mean by that. In the third canto of the Bhagavatam, there's in the pastime with Kardama Muni and Devahuti, you know, Prabhupada in one purport is explaining how Kardama Muni, you know, he was a yogi, and he realized, okay, you know, I've got a desire. I think I should be, probably I should. He was very elevated. He was a very advanced yogi, but he felt that he still wanted to get married. Okay, wanted to have a wife. So Super Soul could understand that, and anyway, it was an arrangement made. So in one purport, Prabhupada explains how. He says, Krishna never disappoints a sincere devotee, regardless of what he wants. But he never gives something that will be detrimental for one's devotional service. See? So that's the understanding. So why, how, and sometimes in the lives of devotees, sincere devotees, undesirable things pop up, like somebody might, you know, some illness, some, you know, I mean, you could think of your own examples, adiyatma gati, bhota gati, daiva. Something undesirable is there in the life of the devotee, but, and we're thinking like, well, how is this possible? Krishna's supposed to be, you know, engineering my life, personally involved in my life and arranging things. How is it that things are going wrong? It's not going wrong. It's going right. It's what we need. Krishna is giving us what we need to grow. Krishna is giving us what we need to advance in devotional service. We can't see it because we are still, you know, we are still to a certain extent conditioned in our thinking. We're still influenced by the modes of material nature. We don't have that transcendental vision all the time. Or at least put it this way. Intellectually, theoretically, we have that understanding, but it's not necessarily, we haven't fully assimilated that as our operational mode of existence, if that makes sense. In other words, we're not fully realized. We theoretically understand, okay, this is all, but it's hard when it actually happens to, you know, to actually be able to accept it. Well, this is Krishna. I need it to have this happen to me because I need to learn a particular lesson. But that's what's going on. Krishna never disappoints a sincere devotee, whatever he wants, but he never gives anything which is going to be detrimental to one's devotional service. See? So whatever's happening to us, it's something in our lives, it might superficially seem like, oh, this is horrible. How could that be happening? And it really seems horrible. But it's what's going to be ultimately beneficial for us. It's Krishna arranging, it's giving us what's going to be ultimately beneficial, not detrimental, to our devotional service. So that's what's going on here, you know. Of course, the Pandavas are even like above that level, you know, because they're special devotees of Krishna. You know, not on the level, say, of the gopis, but they're, you know, very high-level devotees. But this pastime is an example of Krishna teaching the devotee community through, you know, teaching through the Pandavas. You know, the Pandavas are here, receiving these, you know, this difficult treatment from the, you know, the rest of the core of a dynasty like that, and they went through experience, had to undergo so many hardships. But as I said, in their case, it's definitely not a karmic reaction. It's not even, you know, it's not even them having to learn lessons necessarily, but it's part of, they're part of the skit, they're part of the play, and the lesson in this play is that, okay, you know, devotees have to undergo these things sometime, but it's Krishna's in the background, and it's all being directed by, it's been engineered by Krishna, it's being directed by Krishna, and it's all for the ultimate benefit of the devotees, and that's what's going on here. So, I thought I had a lot of different things to say, but I kind of went through all the different points I wanted to make in my notes, so I'll stop there. Does anybody have any questions or comments? But wow, it's 8:10 anyway, so I guess that's about the right time to stop. Yeah. Yeah.
Accordingly to those who are karmics. So let's assume that someone, sometimes we think we're devotees, but actually some of us, I can say myself, we are aspiring devotees. So when we say devotees, actually sometimes we might, in my own experience, do so many things that actually I'm the causing the distress and pain. And maybe if I am not really, how to say, Krishna conscious, I might say, oh, well, actually, is Krishna doing this? He's doing this to me so I can... So can you expand in that? Do you understand my analogy of what I said?
Let me see. You're saying that sometimes, you know, a devotee, an aspiring devotee, some undesirable things come appear in their life, you know, some distress, some reverses and like that. So they can understand philosophically that, okay, this is Krishna doing it, but it's, they have a tough time really, they're still very disturbed by it, right? Yeah, so it's not black and white. You know, devotee means practice. We're practicing. We're trying to, you know, advancing in Krishna consciousness is more like a process of assimilation than it is a process of having an epiphany. You familiar with that word? Epiphany means like a moment of enlightenment. Well, that can be there too. But generally, it's a gradual assimilation of the philosophy, you know, through practicing sadhana bhakti. So in the case of the, you know, like the devotee, the hypothetical devotee you were referring to, yeah, you just got to, you have to use your intelligence and preach to your mind. You have to remind yourself, of the philosophy, which is that, okay, you know, this is Krishna's arrangement. This is Krishna's arrangement. I guess I need this to, I need to experience this in order for me to grow, in order for me to advance in devotional service. I don't see it. I mean, if I was calling the shots, I wouldn't have this happen to me. I mean, I think I could make advancement very nicely without this having to happen to me, you know, but I'm not calling the shots. Krishna's calling the shots, and Krishna's from he's like the supreme GPS. You know, just like when you're caught in a traffic jam, you turn on your GPS and then, you know, because it's using satellite cameras and everything. It, you know, it knows. It has the, in traditional warfare, they have this expression, seize the high ground. Because when you're in the high ground, you can see what's going on the whole battlefield and you can make the correct decisions. So in the same way, you know, from our vantage point, we're thinking like, well, it's not very good. But Krishna's got the high ground. He's got the supreme high ground. He sees the whole picture, you know, past, present, future, the whole thing. And he knows what's the best thing. See? So we have to preach to ourselves like that. We have to preach to ourselves that, okay, this is happening. I'm not happy about this. But this must be for my benefit. This must be for my ultimate benefit and welfare. Otherwise, you know, because I'm trying to be a devotee. I mean, there's tons of room for improvement, but I feel like I'm, you know, to some significant degree, just trying sincerely to be a devotee. Krishna's bringing this into my life. It must be something I'm meant to learn from, grow from, like that. You have to think like that. Otherwise, you're kind of moving towards atheism. I mean, that's one of the foundational mentalities of a devotee. We have to think like that. We have to think like that Krishna's in control and this is happening for my ultimate benefit. Does that make sense? We got to take the humble position. I'll give you another example. Okay, one example, and I can't remember how it came up. I was talking with Rabindranath. I can't remember how we got into this, but in the course of the conversation, I remembered this incident that took place here in Los Angeles, right upstairs in Prabhupada's room. There was two devotees. We don't mention names these days, so I'm not gonna. But they went up there and they were talking with Prabhupada in a very challenging mood. They were in offensive. They were actually, their attitude was offensive. And they were asking Prabhupada questions. I remember one of the things they asked about, they said, Prabhupada, you know, it says in the books that Maharaj Ugrasena had 10 quadrillion bodyguards. And, you know, how is that? You know, I mean, that's more people than are on the whole planet. And, and then the other devotee said, where would they go to the bathroom? In other words, they're, you know, from that comment, I can understand that they were having a go at, you know, they were being offensive. And anyway, Prabhupada kept his cool, and he said, oh, see, they just asked about that? They were already asking about that? And they said, yeah, yeah. Anyway, Prabhupada indulged him for a while before he kind of really got angry with him and told him, you know, what their position was. But he made the point, he said, you know, when we come across some things in the Shastras that seem very inconceivable and hard to understand, he said, and we have to take it as our incapacity. In other words, you can't find fault with the Shastras. You can't find fault with Krishna. You have to take it. This is true. If it says so here in the book, if the spiritual master says so, that is the case. That must be the case. So if I'm not able to appreciate this, understand it, or it's fine, I just have to take, it's my incapacity. It's my defect. It's not the fault of the Shastras. It's not that the Shastra's wrong. It's not that the spiritual master's wrong. It's me. I'm just a very covered over, conditioned neophyte soul, and I'm not able to appreciate this at this point in this stage of my development. I just have to be, you know, accept it, you know, and accept it with faith as the previous acharyas have done, continue with the process of devotional service, and then hopefully as time goes on, as I get purified, as my conscience gets purified, further insight will come in due course of time. You see, that has to be like a foundational mentality in our Krishna conscience. Yes, sorry.
There was an instance in Hawaii many years ago that one guest devotee had given a large amount of money to the temple, and this is when Srila Prabhupada was there visiting at the temple, and the money was put away. It was a cash donation, and the money was put away, and in the night someone stole it. And the devotee that had given the money, he complained to Srila Prabhupada that why has this happened? And, you know, he made some complaints about his donation being stolen. And Srila Prabhupada said, you should not be disturbed by the instrument of your own karma. So I'm thinking that Krishna is a benevolent God. I mean, if we think that Krishna is here for our protection and here for, you know, for our love and our betterment, that some of these things that happen are our own karma. You know, Krishna not doing it to us. It's we're suffering from the results of our own karma.
Yeah, that's a good thing to throw into the mix. Another, just since you mentioned that, when I was hearing that, I was thinking, that devotee who gave that donation and the money was stolen that night, okay, Prabhupada made the point, you know, don't be disturbed at the instrument of your karma, but he made the advancement. He gave the money, you know. He got the purification. He got the benefit of having done it. Even though that, unfortunately, that money was not able to be used in Krishna's service, he made advancement because he gave the donation. So his purification was there. Anybody else? Any other points? Our guest. Yes, sorry.
Not only he made advancement, he went to Prabhupada, which was the right thing to do, in confusion, and he got the explanation of why the action had been taken place. and that he should, what you said, he should take it. Something in me, something that happened is coming from my side. I am the person to be blamed in one sense. So Prabhupada explained to him, so he not only got the benefit that he had given the money, but also the explanation of how he should see things.
Yeah, and hopefully he accepted it and blissfully continued with his devotional service. Our guest, and then we'll end class. We have a guest here. One of us. The gentleman in the back there.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
I agree with Mataji that ultimately, like, Krishna is a witness to our karma and gives results according to our karma, whether we are devotee or non-devotee. And there is no injustice in this world. Actually, we are all suffering according to our bad karma. We are all enjoying according to our good karma, whether we are devotee or non-devotee. And a devotee is a person who is trying to get out of this cycle of good, bad, success, failure, happiness, unhappiness. Until we reach Uttama platform, we still have good and bad in us. And Krishna is telling, it takes many lives of sadhana to reach that Mahatma stage. So, I personally, and also by Shastra, we should always think, I am enjoying because of good karma, I am suffering because of my bad karma. Krishna is only witness, and he is equal to both devotee and non-devotee in giving karmic reactions.
So this
no injustice in this world.
Okay. Thank you. So that's a comment, right? You've made a comment.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much.
I agree with Mataji, I thank Mataji for, you know, enlightening.
Thank you for your comment. Gunjo Chima Bhagavatam Kijai, Srila Prabhupada Kijai.